In our sermon last Sunday night, we spoke about the great cloud of witnesses that is surrounding us, testifying to us and urging us on so that we can be like them, so that when the books are finally written or completed about our life, that we will have things in our life that are of the same quality as what we read about in the scriptures. But before that can happen, we have to make the decision that that's what we want. That we want God to use us. And that we want Him to use us so badly that He can see our diligence, our effort, and our desire to do that for Him. There's a proverb that I like to quote and think about. The preparations of the heart belong to man. You know, brethren, that's all really that we have control over. As James said, we're just a vapor here for a little while, and we should always say, if the Lord will, we do this or that. So the decisions that I make today in my heart regarding what I want for my future, that's within my domain. That's where I have the opportunity to make decisions. But the way the life unfolds and the answer that God ultimately gives to the decisions of what I would like my life to be, that's going to come directly from Him. And it's going to come from Him based on the decisions that I am making. If I am not seeking first His kingdom and His righteousness, if I'm not laying up treasures in heaven but on earth, if I am not giving diligence to present myself approved to God, a worker who doesn't need to be ashamed, then I can't really expect my life to unfold being of much use to Him. And so God does allow each of us to prepare and arrange our heart. Now, before we become a Christian, it's disarray because we really don't know how to arrange it. But after we become a Christian, we get busy bringing our bodies to Him as a living sacrifice, no longer conformed to this world, but being transformed. And God's watching all that. He's watching our zeal. He's watching our determination. Things within the heart no one else can see. The preparations of the heart. What's really going on? Some of us are just coasting. We are wise, we are intelligent, we have good parents, and we can excel many other people in the church just by doing nothing. But God can see that. The preparations of the heart belong to man. And life is going to unfold based on God's answer to our preparation. And then eight verses later, he says almost the same thing again. A man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. We call it providence. God opens doors for people who are prepared to go into them. If we do not get prepared, then we lower the opportunities of what God can use us for. We have examples in the scriptures of those whose hearts were prepared and how God had to deal with them. Rehoboam did evil because he did not prepare his heart to seek the Lord. As his life unfolded, a foreign king came and took much of what Solomon and David had laid up in the temple. You know what it actually says? That they forsook the temple for idols during the reign of Rehoboam because he didn't prepare his heart to seek the Lord. Of Jehoshaphat it was said, good things are found in you, in that you have prepared your heart to seek the Lord. Now the context of this statement is God's anger because Jehoshaphat was going to battle with Ahab. And God was saying, why are you with this wicked king? Jotham became mighty because he prepared his ways before the Lord his God. And of course, Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach statutes and ordinances in Israel. Do we find ourselves in any of these? Are we like Rehoboam, preparing our heart to later fall away, preparing our heart to continue to live in evil? Or are we more like Jehoshaphat? Can God find anything good in us? Have we prepared our heart to seek the Lord? Not what our parents did for us, and not really what the Bible class teacher and preacher is doing for us. It's what we're doing for ourselves. The efforts that we put forth. It's like I say at the end of every lesson, now it's up to you to do something with this. Now, residually, if we just listen to sermons but never do anything, we're still going to get a little bit better. But that's not what God is looking for. God is looking for a heart that is intensely interested, like Ezra, preparing his heart first to seek the law of the Lord and to do the law of the Lord and to teach the statutes and ordinances in Israel. I'm sure God was so happy to have a man like Ezra. So the question that I would ask each of us is, what preparations are we making? We have bemoaned the fact that the opportunities are getting less and less, which means we have more time for preparation. Instead of bemoaning what we can't do, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. Now, right now it's hard to get Bible classes. Right now it's difficult to develop relationships with people once they find out you're a Christian. As my neighbors find I'm a preacher, I get shunned. Nobody, I got one neighbor who likes to talk to me. The rest of them, they don't have much interest. It's sad because I have so much to share with them. But here's the interesting passage. Because remember, the preparations in the heart are my domain. The answer God will give in the way my life unfolds is his domain. I, the Lord, search the heart. I test the mind, even to give each man according to his ways and according to the results of his deeds. Now, we might normally look at that and think of the judgment day. And of course, ultimately, that's where it's going to come out. But you know something? The actions that we get involved in, we're going to see in a few moments, there are vessels of wrath, and God has uses for them. There are vessels of mercy, God has uses for them. And then in between are those people who, to one degree or another, can be used or can't be used. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold. His eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked, and the one who loves violence, his soul hates. So God knows my heart, he knows your heart, he knows what we have done, he knows what our innate abilities are, he knows exactly what we're capable of. Looking back on Moses' "I'm not eloquent" comment, and God saying, "Who made a man's mouth? I know what you're capable of, Moses." It's interesting that Stephen, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, said he was mighty in word. So Moses had greater capabilities than he was aware of. But the point that I'm really struggling or trying to get across this morning is that it's the decisions you and I are making in our hearts that are going to determine how our life unfolds. Because if God can use us, he will. In a great house, there are vessels of gold and silver and wood and clay. Some for honor, some for dishonor. And then the criteria, and I keep stealing from later slides, but the criteria is if a man purges himself, if we are preparing ourselves. Saul was unprepared. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever. If Saul had prepared his heart, the promise here would have been God would have made Saul and his house in Benjamin forever. But now your kingdom shall not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. You see, that was the big difference between David and Saul. David prepared his heart. He was already a man after God's own heart. You remember when Samuel was sent to pick him, and his oldest brother came along, and the older brother was handsome, strong, perfectly, outwardly king material. God says, I've rejected him because man looks at the outer appearance, but I look at the heart. So the preparations of the heart is where God is looking. He's looking at that innermost part of my soul and your soul. What do I really want? I mean, let's take away for a moment the peer pressure of having to be here every service because we understand the brethren are expecting us to be here. What do we want? If we didn't have any outside at all, I think about Daniel sometime after he was taken away from his friends, his family, all external motivations were gone. And most of the other young men had already succumbed to eating things that God wouldn't allow them to eat. But Daniel had prepared his heart. And God could see it. And so God made him and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He gave them interpretations of dreams. He gave them power because they were prepared. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you. Now, why didn't he keep? Because he hadn't prepared his heart. He didn't understand Bible authority. He didn't understand how to respect and honor God. That's something you have to prepare your heart to be able to do. And so David's preparation, he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will. Now that wasn't stated after he became a king. That was stated when he was a shepherd out in the field, when he was a young man, even before Goliath. God had already looked at David, looked at the preparations, the motivations, the goals, the plans, the efforts, the toil, the sacrifices. I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart. And it worked. David, after he had in his own generation served the counsel or purpose of God, fell asleep, was laid unto his fathers, and saw corruption. Now we spent about, three or four weeks on God's choices. That back in eternity, God made plans and he made ideas. He determined when nations would rise, when they would fall, what their dominion would be, what their territory would be. He determined at what point he would be intervening. He made all these decisions, and then he had to choose the people who would do it. And so God, through Isaiah, 200 years before, can say, I've picked Cyrus to be the king of over Medo-Persia, and he's going to bring my people back to Jerusalem. And God can tell Daniel, after Babylon will come Medo-Persia, then Alexander the Great, the single horn, and the four generals who would follow him, who would create so much trouble for Israel. And then he knew about the fourth kingdom, Rome. And in the days of the kings of Rome, a kingdom will be set up. And so God is looking and he's assessing people. He's watching us be born. He's watching us make these decisions. He's watching us as various things enter into our life and the way we respond to them. And he makes a choice. I'm going to use Alan for this. I'm going to use Virgil for this. I'm going to use Rob for this. I'm going to use Martha. And I could just list all our names. God knows what we're capable of, and he puts us where he knows we need to be. Look at David's warning to Solomon and then realize Solomon didn't take the warning. He had prepared his heart up to a certain point. He had asked God for wisdom. But then he married a bunch of women he wasn't supposed to marry. Now, why did he do that? He did that because he hadn't properly prepared his heart. Because, let's face it, brother, most of us who have prepared our hearts, if we had been in Solomon's shoes, we'd have been terrified to marry those women because God had said, if you marry them, they will turn away your heart. But Solomon didn't. But here's what David said. Now, therefore, in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, be careful to seek out all the commandments of the Lord, that you may possess this good land and leave it as an inheritance for your children after you. As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your fathers. The God of your father. Serve him with a loyal heart and with a willing mind. For the Lord searches all hearts and understands all the intents of the hearts. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever. It's in my hands and your hands. God already knows the choices we're going to make. But the purpose of this lesson is to warn us. We still have opportunities to change our direction if we need to. If there's something in my life right now that is keeping me back, it needs to be gone. I need to show God how interested I am. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. If your eye causes you to stumble, pluck it out. Has God seen that kind of effort? God's answer matches our preparation. He will endure with much long suffering vessels of wrath prepared for destruction if that's what we make ourselves. God didn't force Pharaoh. He didn't force the Jewish people. They just didn't prepare their heart. And when Jesus came along and showed them what that preparation should have been, they wouldn't repent. So God endures with much long suffering vessels of wrath prepared for destruction. And sadly, brethren, that's the vast majority of the world today. Anyone who doesn't obey the gospel. Verse 23, that he may make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, which he had prepared. You see, God has made preparations too. You remember Jesus saying, prepare, you righteous, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. And then to the wicked he said, you will be cast into the lake of fire prepared for the devil and his angels. God prepares based on our preparation. And God already has a place for us based on our preparation. But it's in my hand. It's in your hand. You can make the choices. Pray without ceasing. Don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Give diligence to present yourself approved. I mean, we could go on and on and on. Are we making preparations? So what we prepare of ourselves, God has prepared us for. He already knows what it is. He's already got his plans laid out. I'm just telling you, you will stay in the driver's seat until you're dead. You can change where you're going to end up. Even though God knows what it is, he is going to give us the opportunity to make those changes. If we prepared ourselves to become a vessel of wrath, we're prepared for destruction. But if we have prepared ourselves to be a vessel of mercy, we're prepared for glory. You see it? Prepared for destruction and prepared for glory. The preparations of the heart are of man. The answer of the tongue, what God finally says, is in God's hands. To Timothy, here's the preparation. And you remember what he said in 2 Timothy. just prior to this verse. The faith which dwelt first in your grandmother, Eunice, and then in your mother, I might have got that wrong, Lois. I think it's backwards. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And now in you. So be diligent to present yourself approved to God. A worker who does not need to be ashamed. That's what Saul forgot to do. That's what David did. That's what Rehoboam didn't do, but Ezra did. That's what Timothy did. And Demas apparently didn't do because he loved this present world and forsook Paul. To Joshua, God said, "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth. You shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it, for then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success, because then I'll be able to bless you. I'll be able to make you the ruler that I need, that he couldn't make Saul or Rehoboam or some of the other individuals." So here's the question. As I look at my own preparations, have I reached a point where I never stop talking about God's word? Or I'm thinking about God's word before I talk to make sure that what I say doesn't violate his word. And I'm meditating on his word day and night so that I can do. Well, I'm prepared. I'm prepared for glory. And I'm prepared for whatever comes. That's what Noah was doing before he built the ark. That's what Abraham was doing before he was called. The principle's the same. But the clock is ticking. Verse 11, when by reason of the time, you ought to be teachers. You see, the preparations of the heart have to come out into the daily life at some point where everybody can see it. And so the man who, or the woman who prepares themselves, the reason of time will come when God is now ready to use them. But if they're not ready, you need again that someone teach you the rudiments of the first principles of the oracles of God. Procrastination, delay, sloth, priorities. God's weighing it all to decide where to plug you in and ultimately where to put you. Prepared for glory, prepared for destruction, prepared for the kingdom, prepared from the foundation of the world, prepared for the fire that's been prepared for the devil and his angels. And the amazing thing is, I'm in complete control. When we stand before God on the judgment day, you're not going to be able to blame anybody. Say, well, it's my parents' fault. Well, how long have you been alive since your parents are gone? What changes could you have made? Well, it's my this fault or that fault. No, no, it's your fault. In a great house, there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for honor and some for dishonor. Every house has that, and so does God's. The church has people like this in it. In the same or similar analogy, in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul says that we are stones making up a temple. And some of these stones are gold and silver and precious stone. Wouldn't you love to be a stone of emerald or a stone of diamond? But there's also stones of wood, hay, and stubble. Now, I know what I want to be, but are the preparations of my heart allowing God to make me that? Does God see me as a vessel of honor, sanctified, useful for the master? I always like the older translation better, meet for the master's use, prepared for every good work. If God needed someone to go discuss the institutional problem with someone who is reaching toward coming back to the truth, could he send you? Do you know enough about it? Have you prepared yourself to be able to talk about this? If God needed someone to go talk to a Seventh-day Adventist, or if he needed someone to go talk to a Jehovah's Witness, are we prepared? Are we a vessel of honor? Meet and prepared for every good work. The solid foundation of God stands having this seal. The Lord knows who are His. He knows who's making the preparations. He can see. He knew David. He knew what kind of heart he had because he'd watched him. Watched him make decisions. Watched him carry out those decisions. Watched his responses when he did things wrong, when he did things right. How, what kind of a man. And he said, you know something? David's just like me. He's got the same heart I do. And he makes the same decisions I would make. What a tremendous compliment. Of Job, he said, I have no one like him in all the earth. Because Job prepared his heart. Of Daniel, he said, you are greatly beloved. Why? Because as a youth, he prepared his heart. You know, we just sang in the songbook that we need brave volunteers. The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstool. We know who that is. That's talking about Jesus. The Lord shall send the rod of your strength out of Zion, rule in the midst of your enemies. Your people shall be volunteers in the day of your power. And then verse 4, which Hebrews spends chapter after chapter on, the Lord has sworn and will not relent. You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. So the context is the church. This is when Jesus is ruling. This is when he's a priest on his throne. This is before the end when he delivers it all back to God. This is now. Whenever now is. It was now when it was written or quoted by David. I'm sorry, quoted by Paul. Quoted by the Hebrew writer. It's still true today. Your people will be volunteers. There's no compulsion. There's no draft here. Nobody's going to force you. Nobody's going to come to you and say, look, it's time for you to get your heart prepared. How would we know? We don't know what's in your heart. Only God knows. Volunteers. He needs volunteers in the day of his power. I heard the voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Isaiah raises his hand. I'm ready. Well, God wouldn't have given him that opportunity, but he prepared his heart. Moses stood at the entrance of the camp and said, whoever's on the Lord's side, come to me. And all the children of Levi gathered themselves together. It was a choice. And to the elders, he says the same thing. Not of compulsion, but willingly. Willingly. Look at some of the examples and ask yourself, are you one of these people? Have you prepared your heart to be generous? At the tabernacle in the wilderness, whoever is of a willing heart. Verse 21, everyone came whose heart was stirred, everyone whose spirit was willing. And then verse 22, as many as had a willing heart. Generosity, humility, come through preparation. They're not natural. They're not the natural state. Just watch what happens to a child if you put two pieces of candy on the plate. One of them is beautiful and the other one is not. Which one is the child going to reach for? Now, I would say you go first. But a child normally wouldn't do that unless he'd had his heart prepared. But the point here is that God is more interested in our voluntary spirit and the preparations that we're making to become that volunteer than in what we end up ultimately doing. Jesus made it clear. If you're just given an opportunity to give a cold cup of cold water, it's all you ever have a chance to do in your whole life. You prepared yourself, but there wasn't anything to do. God didn't need anybody. But you were prepared. He did need a cup of cold water. You gave a cup of cold water. That's all you need. At the building of the temple, it's the same thing. Willingly, loyal heart. In the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things. And now with joy, I have seen your people who are present here to offer willingly to you. Now, sadly, many of these people rose to the occasion but then dropped back down. That's the beauty of example. That's the beauty of you and I who have prepared our hearts, acting with a prepared heart, and moving those around us to do the same thing. And some people, I remember once baptizing a couple in Oroville. This would have been back in the, I think in the 80s. Oh, that's right. Rusty might know. Well, I don't know if you know him. I won't say their name. I told Jeannie one day, these people are living way above what they're capable of. Our example and the example of the church had brought them into a wonderful faithfulness. And within a few months, they had fallen away, divorced, and gone back into the world. Because the influence can make you look like you're one of these people. And all of these people, same thing with the building of the tabernacle. After the people offered the willingly, they all died in the wilderness. So it's our choices. And this is my last slide. I've drawn from a previous slide because I want us to see what's at stake here. What if God, wanting to show his wrath and make his power known, endured with much long suffering vessels of wrath prepared for destruction? Jesus said, when the angels come, they will gather out of my kingdom all who have caused stumbling, all who have practiced evil. Like the dragnet, we're going to draw it up on the shore and we're going to throw out. I don't want to be thrown out. I don't want you to be thrown out. But it has to do with our preparation. It has to do with our desire. We can pretend. We can act like we're one of the faithful here. But God sees into the heart. He sees the people who are truly willingly, who are truly sacrificing, volunteering, working, preparing, hoping, dreaming to do something good for the Lord. And those of us who are just here. There are vessels of wrath prepared for destruction. But there are also riches and glory on vessels of mercy prepared for beforehand for glory. That's what I want to be. That's what you want to be. I hope that's why we're here. But it's what's going to go on in my heart tomorrow morning. That's what God's looking at. What we're doing here today, he's also looking. He wants us to listen with a willing mind, a willing heart, with a desire to grow. But you remember what James said. Be doers of the word. Don't be like that man who looked at himself in the mirror on Sunday morning and said, I need to get that cleaned off, but straightway forgot what manner of man he was. Because 3 days later, all those good intentions and all those wonderful goals we were going to make because we saw ourselves so clearly never get done. And you can look back on your own life and decide whether or not that's the kind of person you are. If you're one of these prepared people who's preparing to be used. The song of encouragement this morning is number 263. Is your heart right with God? After this sermon, after weighing out all of your efforts and all the things you've done for the Lord and all the preparations and all the zeal and all the seeking first and all the priorities and willingness, is your heart right with the Lord? Or would you say, I need to tell the Lord I'm sorry and work a little harder? You might not need to come forward. But if you do need to come forward because your heart is not right with God, because you have some public or blatant thing in your life that you know can only be dealt with through a public confession. Today would be a great day to do that, to show God your prepared heart, your willing heart, your zealous heart. He's watching. He knows. He knows how long we've been sitting, knowing what we should do, but not having the courage to do it. Same thing with becoming a Christian. If we can help you in any way this morning to help with that decision, we give you that opportunity right now while we stand and sing this song.